The World War I era roots of modern-day government spin. I'm David Brancaccio. First up, yesterday the federal government triggered its antitrust lawsuit against Alphabet, owner of Google. Now we're learning states are set to file similar cases alleging the search giant abused its market clout. Some had argued that technology companies require dramatically new thinking when it comes to antitrust and consumer benefits versus consumer damage. Marketplace's Erica Barris joins us here. This case doesn't try new theory?
One of the interesting things about this is that the Department of Justice doesn't appear to be restructuring antitrust law for tech. They're sticking to existing laws. In a lot of ways, this is similar to the case the DOJ brought against Microsoft, saying it manipulated the market. That was a couple decades ago.
And what's with the states getting involved, too?
At least two groups of attorneys general are investigating the company, split across party lines. One effort is led by Texas Republican Attorney General and includes attorneys general from 48 states. That effort focuses on online advertising and has been underway for a year. The other effort includes a bipartisan group of attorneys general. That group released a statement stating its probe is expected to conclude in the coming weeks. They say if they file a complaint, they would file a motion to consolidate with the Department of Justice case against Google.
And how might we expect Alphabet Google to respond?
The government is alleging Google blocked more consumer-friendly search engines, thus hurting competition and innovation. But law experts say Google could say its product was just effective and not meant to be exclusionary. Google has already said the lawsuit is deeply flawed, and the company is expected to argue that the government overestimated the company's power by defining its market too narrowly.
Marketplace's Erica Barris, thank you. Markets, the S&P future is up 0.1%, the Dow future down just slightly, the NASDAQ future is up by less than 0.2%. Netflix stock is down more than 5% in pre-market trading now. Lots of people signed up early to Netflix, early in the pandemic. But when the company published its results late yesterday, it was clear the new subscriptions have tapered down in the summer to fall quarter. A Government Accountability Office report from 2016 found the federal government spends $500 million a year to pay the salaries of more than 5,000 public relations people to explain things to the public. There's little reason to think that number has gone down since. But when does public communication become government propaganda, where officials work to get the public to agree with its party line? A new book released today sees the roots of modern government persuasion in a World War I era office set up by the Woodrow Wilson administration in 1917. It was called the Committee on Public Information, and it got a lot of government spin placed in media far and wide. Joining us is John Maxwell Hamilton, a professor at the Manship School of Mass Communication at Louisiana State University. His new book out today is called Manipulating the Masses, Woodrow Wilson and the Birth of American Propaganda. Greetings, Jack.
Glad to be here, David.
So the Committee on Public Information, President Wilson approved its creation to do what in the First World War?
Well, basically to get the United States behind the war in all kinds of ways, both emotionally, but also in practical ways, like buying war bonds, enlisting in the military, and sometimes rather basic things like sending in binoculars if they had any extra ones around the house to make sure that the Navy had enough on their ships.
Now, in a democracy, the government is supposed to, I suppose, communicate with the public and let ideas get debated. That's not exactly what we're talking about with this thing.
Well, in fairness, the Committee on Public Information was populated by some very fine progressive journalists and progressive educators and the rest. But it ended up doing what propagandists often do, which is oversell and decide to take shortcuts rather than be democratic. And that's just what the CPI did. It had front organizations. It subsidized publications but didn't say that it did so, and the list goes on.
And some of what it produced, you know, wasn't really true in an objective sense.
They did sometimes not tell the truth. Mostly they were just tendentious. They told one side of the story. But they also used techniques to stifle speech that was inconvenient. So today, you know, we use the word fake news. But in those days, they used the word creeling. George Creel was the head of the Committee on Public Information, and he was seen as always putting spin on information rather than providing a clear, full account.
And that's the thing about this committee in the First World War. It worked great. I mean, mass persuasion works.
Yes. And, you know, the beginnings of modern American advertising, public relations, all begin with the Committee on Public Information. And as I say, some of that was good. For example, public service advertising that we have today, that comes out of the CPI. On the other hand, any time that somebody challenged the Wilson administration, the CPI called it enemy talk. The idea being that if you said something that opposed the administration, you were being unpatriotic.
And here you are, Jack, writing a history book about the Wilson presidency, and pieces of it look torn right out of today's news. I mean, this year, the government dreamt up an ad campaign, the Department of Health and Human Services, that was going to, you know, pull together actors and celebrities to cheer up Americans and tell them that COVID-19, you know, it may be bad, but not that bad.
Right. $300 million was spent on that, is being spent on that. But think about it this way. Everything the CPI did can be found today. Take, for example, social media. You know, you look at your social media feeds, whatever they are, and all of a sudden other kinds of messages creep in that you didn't ask for. The antecedent for that with the CPI is that in World War I, they created something called the Four-Minute Men, who stood up during the change of reels in movie theaters for 4 minutes to speak on some subject that the federal government told them to talk about. And they were heavily scripted. They looked like they were local activities because it was local people that did them. But that's like social media. You were just sitting there in the movie theater and all of a sudden somebody comes out with a message that the government wants you to have.
John Maxwell Hamilton is a professor at the Manship School of Mass Communication at Louisiana State University. The new book is called Manipulating the Masses, Woodrow Wilson and the Birth of American Propaganda. Jack, thank you.
Thank you very much, David.
He's also a global fellow at the Woodrow Wilson International Center for Scholars. We have an excerpt of the book up at marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio. You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report. We're from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.